Last week, the world received news of the first partial face transplant. The operation was performed in France on a woman whose face had been severely disfigured after being mauled by a dog. This week, her doctors say the woman is doing well, medically and psychologically. Still, hurdles lie ahead. The woman is undergoing a strict regimen of immunosuppression therapy so her body does not reject the donor's skin. She also has a team of psychologists helping her. To find out what some of the emotional issues might be, we turn now to Dr. Thomas Wise, chairman of the psychiatry department at Inova Fairfax Hospital and professor of psychiatry at Johns Hopkins University. He joins us from his office in Falls Church, Virginia. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today, Doctor.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Before we talk about this specific case, you're involved in deciding who gets a liver or a heart or a kidney transplant. What psychological factors go into that decision?
Well, there are a variety of them. You first want to know what the individual's psychological makeup is. Do they have any concurrent, or we call comorbid psychiatric disorders? Are they very depressed? Are they anxious? Has this been longstanding, or is it something due to the illness and the whole area of organ failure? Another very important point is, do they have any substance abuse? About 20 to 40% of people that are candidates for liver transplantation actually have alcoholism as a primary problem.
I guess
you need to know about that.
Everybody remembers Mickey Mantle, of course.
For sure.
Yeah. Is there also a psychological issue about worrying about the donor?
Oh, certainly. And we see occasionally after a transplant, we call it an acute xenophobic reaction. People become very anxious that they have someone else's organ inside them. They generally are curious about what this is, but the anxiety is treated by really talking about this, and it's short-lived, but it's something worth knowing about.
Mm-hmm. Do candidates have to have a psychological evaluation?
They do. They really do. Organs are scarce, and you wouldn't want to really offer this to somebody who doesn't have the psychological or social supports necessary to cope with it.
And what makes one person a psychologically strong person and another maybe less strong?
Well, we don't know all the elements that make up the psychological strength, but we do know a history of someone who has never complied with medical treatment, who continues to drink, continues to smoke. Kidney transplants are frequently needed by people with serious diabetic complications, and if someone's never been able to manage their diabetes, that would give you pause for thought about how well they could manage transplantation. One needs to take a lot of medicines following the organ transplantation, and they need to get along well with the transplant team, they need to come back for follow-up appointments. All those issues need to be investigated and make sure that they can follow through with this.
We're talking with Dr. Thomas Wise about some of the psychological issues involved in transplantation, especially now after the transplantation of a face. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And, Doctor, I have to be clear. Now, you have not been involved in a face transplant, but I wonder, as you hear about this, I wonder if you can speak in theory to the types of emotional issues that might be unique. Faces are unique.
Yeah, although I haven't seen a facial transplant, I have seen a number of people with severe facial injuries. So mm-hmm. one can maybe make an analogy to this, that people that have facial injuries, whether through traumatic injuries, wartime injuries, burns, have high rates of post-traumatic stress disorder. They have high rates of feeling depressed, clearly impairment in the quality of life. Every time they look in a mirror, they're reminded of this kind of trauma. So we'd expect that someone with a facial transplant would at least have a baseline of trauma associated with the actual episode that led to the facial difficulty. And in this patient, what little I know about it, she was mauled by a dog, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
That certainly would foster potentially a traumatic episode that would have some consequences despite the transplantation, number one. Number two, the transplantation probably will not allow her to look exactly the same. I mean, one would assume that. So every time she looks in a mirror, it's going to bring up some sort of thoughts. Now, it's hard to know what those will be. But we do know that people with all sorts of craniofacial trauma do have all sorts of psychological problems. So it would not be surprising that this individual will have a psychological journey to make, if you will, to get back to a baseline, hopefully.
Now, to be clear, someone would have to have been severely disfigured for anybody to even consider a face transplant.
There's no doubt about it. And, of course, the fact that this is almost a life-saving procedure has to be considered. But that doesn't mean that the individual, in this case a woman, will be without some form of psychological challenge, in particular the post-traumatic issues, the depression and anxiety that came from the original injury.
And also the who am I issue. Clearly the disfiguration in the first place has transformed that. You look in the mirror and it's not you, But somebody else's face?
Yes, that will be an extreme challenge to deal with, a great challenge I'd put forward. Now, it might be a godsend, and if she, because she was so disfigured, she'll look a lot better. But that's where her pre-morbid or her pre-transplant psychological status will be very important in predicting how well she does post-transplant.
I wonder, would you have to consider psychological advice for the donor's family as well? I mean, they would be concerned that somebody who looked just like Uncle Ernie is still walking around.
Oh, by far. It'll depend on. Now, they can script this, if you will, or look at it as a great thing that the individual who's the donor is doing a great thing and lives on in that sense. But on the other hand, you don't want the family to be in contact with the donor, with the recipient, by and large. That would be my advice. It'd be a rather odd situation that someone who died has been able to give this partial organ, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
In solid organ transplants, we don't advise, in fact, discourage that kind of contact.
Really? Because you'd think that there would be some bond between, you know.
There is a bond, and at times you do want some contact, but you don't want it necessarily to be a regular thing. It would depend. Certainly in certain circumstances, traumatic accidents that lead to a donor, it's a blessing in many ways that the individual's life lives on through someone else. But people have to go on with their lives. It could clearly prevent appropriate bereavement and closure for both people, and it would potentially enhance the guilt of the recipient.
The guilt of the recipient.
Yeah, somebody who is now been given a gift of life due to someone else's misfortune.
Ah, so why them, not me? All of that.
Yeah.
In addition to those identity problems, which, again, as bad as it would be for a kidney face, you would think.
This is extraordinary. And the identity problems are a new dimension that we really don't have much of a handle on. This is going to be something that should be carefully studied and looked at all the parameters.
And I'm told that I read medically this kind of surgery would have been possible as long as 8-10 years ago. But everybody has been extremely cautious because of there are ethical issues involved. There are ethical issues involved in any kind of a transplant, of course, but in particular because of these psychological issues.
Well, yeah, and I do think certainly one always has to consider the ethics. But the real issue, I think, is we could confer some great benefit upon this poor woman, and if it is capable without hurting someone else, it's something that should be considered. I think the psychological ramifications, well, then, once those are looked at, we can better understand what are the potential negative ethical issues.
Dr. Wise, thanks very much for being with us
today. Thank you.
Thomas Wise is chairman of the psychiatry department at Inova Fairfax Hospital and a professor of psychiatry at Johns Hopkins University, and he joined us today by phone from his office in Falls Church, Virginia. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan.